Well, good evening, everyone. It's good to see you all. Tonight, we are going to use this time as more of a class period, really, as we spend some time, I think for several weeks on Sunday nights, talking about Israel and studying about Israel. And tonight is going to be, in a lot of ways, kind of an introductory kind of lesson, just to kind of fill everybody in on just different aspects of what this trip to Israel was all about. My thought and my plan is, as we go forward with this, is to just consider a lot of biblical sites that we visited when we were there. And at each site, there's just some interesting things that we can learn, and we can turn to the pages of the Bible and we can read about these places. That's what makes it just so interesting to me. And so the purpose in my mind, the intent, is for this to be a Bible study, not National Geographic, you know, kind of a here's a trip you can go on kind of a thing. But it needs to be something that we can really learn from. Tonight, I'm not sure if we're going to spend as much time in the text as I would like to, because I kind of feel like there's just some preliminary things we need to understand about the trip that'll help us as we go forward then, I think. So, the purpose of this study is going to try to understand some things about the geography of Israel and to relate Bible stories, the things that happened in those cities. It's kind of interesting as you read through the story, there are some cities and some regions that you can read about, it seems like, from the beginning to the end, nearly. And some that kind of come along later, and then you don't hear about them no more. You know, some cities kind of came and go, I guess you would say. But there's some incredible Bible stories that we can relate to the cities or the regions. And it is really interesting to go to some of these places and visit these places and just think, you know, you can read about this in Scripture. Something that's really interesting to me, and I've never just been all that into archaeology and all the digs and stuff like that that happens. But I think I have grown to have a little bit more appreciation of those things as time has kind of gone on. I guess... As you've learned to understand, I'm just very simple-minded. And there's a lot of things the Bible says that God says that I just believe it. I mean, God said it and I believe it. But I've also learned over time that there are some people that they start to grow in faith when there's a dig that's done somewhere and they find a city, some ancient ruins that some have said never existed. I mean, there are those who have just said, these places are fictitious, this has never happened, it was never there, and then all of a sudden they have to say, well, maybe there was a city there. And the Bible has told us about that place all along. It's not new news at all to those who have believed by faith. And I just find that interesting. And I'm hoping that in some ways, maybe that'll help lead to faith in the minds of some. You know, the point of emphasis of our study here is just that. It is to be a Bible study, and I hope as we get into it, there comes a point where we have some comments and questions and where we can have some discussion on some things. And the intent of our study is to help us to really appreciate God's Word, to study some things about Israel and the geography of the region and all, is to help us understand more about God's Word and appreciate more about the place where the Bible story took place. That's what we're trying to do. So, sometimes people ask, well, why travel to the Bible lands? And I'm going to tell you, for a long time, I had zero interest in going to the Bible lands. It's only just been the last few years that I started thinking, you know, I might like that. That might just be something, an interesting study to do, more or less. It's interesting that there's a lot of people that go to the Bible lands, the Holy Lands is what most people say. They call it we're going to the Holy Lands, as though going to Israel somehow makes you closer to God because it's a holy land. And I'll tell you, I think that was one rub that I had against it for a long time. Is because some people, they look at the trip to the Holy Lands as being their pilgrimage. And if they can go to that site where they believe Jesus was born or where he was crucified, that somehow that draws them closer to God. Now, you know, places like Jerusalem is in fact like the Mecca of places to go for Muslims, Jews, and Christians, for those who are going on their life their lifelong pilgrimage to draw nearer to God. Now, I'm going to tell you something. It was not a pilgrimage to me. I mean, I had faith before going. It wasn't an effort to try to encourage or bolster my faith. It didn't make me feel closer to God, per se, by going. Greater appreciation for Him, more appreciation for His Word? Well, perhaps. Maybe I have to make a point with that. But there was not some kind of a weird experience by going to Israel. My point here is that, you know, some people go, and sometimes you'll hear people there talk about they're on their pilgrimage, because there's a lot of tourists. And you may trade conversation with some along the way, and some will tell you, I've waited all my life to do this. This is my pilgrimage. I find that interesting. You know, that's how some would view such a thing. You know, for some, to go where they can touch and they can feel and they can see, you know, where they believe Jesus has walked. Some will get on their hands and knees and rub the places where it is said that Jesus once was at, where He was born or where He was crucified or where His body lay. And the experience wasn't like that for me. It was interesting to go to those places where tradition would hold and where we would believe maybe Jesus was at or other great fathers of the Bible. But it was not some kind of spiritual experience. You know, I went there to study the land. I wanted to understand more about the people. I wanted to see some of these sites, if for no other reason, so I could come here and try to tell you about some of these places. And so for me, the trip was a 10-day boots-on-the-ground Bible study. And as some will tell you, the trip was not a vacation. Now, I'm not really sure there would be too many people going to Israel for vacation. I mean, vacation, I think about putting my feet back, you know, sitting on the porch and looking at the mountains and reading a book or listening to the ocean as it rolls in. That's a vacation. Going to Israel is not a vacation. It was tiring. It was exhausting, actually. Because every day, the 10 days we were in Israel was absolutely crammed full. You know, the wake-up call came at 6 o'clock. We ate breakfast at 7 o'clock. And 8 o'clock, we were on the bus. And the earliest we came back to a hotel was 4:30. Usually it was 5:30 or 6 or 6:30. It was full days. You know, you come to a point where learning is diminished as the day goes on because you just cannot absorb anymore. It was a 10-day Bible study. That's what it was for me. And so I just tell you these things because when you talk with some of your friends who have gone on their pilgrimage to Jerusalem, they might have a really different view of some things, and they might tell us different things than what I've experienced there. And I learned, too, that there are some trips that they don't spend as much time. They might only be in the country for 5 days or something like that, and they just see a few of the high points. And, of course, they would go to, you know, the Church of Nativity, and they'd go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and they would go to the Mount of Olives, and they would go to these places where they feel like they're walking where Jesus walked because they're on their pilgrimage. Now, you understand what I'm saying when I say people go on their pilgrimage to draw close to God, to the Holy Lands. And I'm trying to say that it was a 10-day Bible study to the lands that we read about in the Bible. That's what it was to me. And that's kind of the basis, then, of what I have to share with you. Some have asked, and I'll tell you about this, you know, how do you get to Israel? Well, there's no direct way there from here. You know, it's kind of a roundabout way. It's not real bad. We go to Charlotte and catch a plane to JFK, and then we go to Israel from there. And so it was cars, trains, taxi, buses, and airplanes, and for some, camels. You know, that's another story. And so there's this 12-hour intercontinental flight, you know, from JFK straight into Tel Aviv in Jerusalem, nonstop flight. And we left, we got up at 6 o'clock Monday morning. We were in Tel Aviv about 5 o'clock in the evening on Tuesday. You know, is when we got in. You remember what the world is? little closer look. Somewhere in there is Israel, but you can never see it from here. I can see the United States, but you can't see Israel. Even when you draw closer and you kind of look at what the air flight would be like, though really and truly we probably didn't go a straight line across the Atlantic like that. You followed the arch of the earth and you swung way up and back and hopefully didn't cross over any hostile ground. But you know, I don't really know where we went and, you know, in flying in. And keeping in mind here, and when you're looking at that map where the line ends there at Israel, Israel's about the size of New Jersey. You know, it's just not very big. You know, it's very small as countries go. Even when we draw it in closer to where the map gets fuzzy, it's not your eyes, it's the map gets fuzzy, you know, you still can't hardly see Israel on the map. It's just not that big. The other question some have said, weren't you scared? Because there were some incidents that took place in Israel when we were there. That's when those stabbings took place, remember? And I don't remember ever feeling scared, really. I mean, because there are just some things that happen in Israel. And it's kind of a way of life. And it's not always just like it looks like on TV here. You know, when we were in Jerusalem, we had a TV in our room, and we could get Fox News, little five-minute just excerpts of the headlines is all really, maybe it was 10 minutes worth, I don't know. Didn't watch much of it. Don't watch much of it here, don't watch much of it there. But watching Fox News, you know, it seemed like half of the news was about the turmoil and the disruptions in Israel. And, you know, to kind of watch it, you know, on the news, you would think that Israel was just at war with itself. And, well, kind of it is. But not like it looks like on TV. Everybody wasn't fighting everybody in the streets. I mean, every morning we'd open up the curtains and look out a busy street in front of our hotel. There were cars coming and going. There were buses. There was a commuter train that went back and forth in front of our hotel. People are going to the grocery store and they're going to work. The kids are going to daycare and to school. I mean, life just goes on. Now, that's not to say that there's not some concerns, because when we were there one day in Bethlehem and another day in Hebron, there were Palestinians who stabbed Israelis. That happens on kind of a regular basis too, or it's the others fighting to the others, you know, but it's kind of isolated incidences in those cases, what those were. And when you watch the news, you think that everybody's stabbing everybody, but it's not really that way. Someone said to me, and this made a whole lot of sense, you know, when we see the news and the events taking place, oh, it's totally slipped my mind. Where was in Missouri where the riots took place a few months ago?
Ferguson,
that's right, thank you. You know, when we see the news and we see Ferguson, Missouri, some people assume that America in every city is fighting just like that. Well, that's the perception we have of Israel, isn't it? That in every city, every day, that there's fighting going on like that. And that's not the case. It's not that way. And I'll tell you one reason why. Is because everywhere you go, if you're riding in the bus going through town at street corners and places like that, there's sometimes checkpoints you have to drive through, or you just see soldiers walking along the streets. And you know, they are well fortified. You know, that Uzi, I'm sure, has bullets in it. And every one of them's carrying one. And every 18-year-old man, you know, serves in the military for 3 years. And when he comes out, that Uzi that he carried for 3 years, submachine gun, that's his to keep. And so if you're in the marketplace, we were in Jerusalem, Old Town Jerusalem, walking around the marketplace, and there was military presence there everywhere, you know. But you might just see a young man walking through town with a T-shirt and short pants on, holding hands with his son as they're walking through streets, and his wife and family are right there, and he's got an Uzi on his back. It's his. He was trained how to use it, and he has the right to use it should the need arise. And so those incidents that took place when we were there, for the most part, are isolated incidences. And I've told some they were more or less suicide missions, because when you try to do something like that, someone's going to shoot you. And that's what happened in those two incidences that happened when we were there. And so why am I telling you this? Just so you know some things about Israel today, you know, and what's going on. But what's interesting to me now, someone says, well, I wish we could stop the fighting there. Well, I wish we could too, but we can't, and we never will. Because back to the days of Isaac and Ishmael, When there was the separation of ways, God is the one who did the separating. And it was God who was the one that said, you know, to Ishmael, he said to Hagar, the mother of Ishmael, you recall, you know, that of Ishmael, he shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand will be against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all of his brethren. And you know, you have the descendants of Ishmael, you have the descendants of Isaac. And guess what? They're warring against each other. It's always been that way, and I don't see how we're going to change it. And so there are some things going on in the Middle East that I wish for peace. I pray for peace. I wish things could be different there. But there's some things that we're just not going to change. So, again, just trying to give an overview of some things about Israel as we know them. And so the safety concern. You know what? Internal conflicts. Here's something else. You know, you have primarily, you have Jews, Muslim, and Christian in Israel. And for the most part, they coexist. I mean, they recognize and understand that there's different beliefs. Not saying they agree with each other. Not saying that at all. But it's like our Israeli guide is Christian, as he would say. He kind of using the term in a broad sense, understand. And our bus driver was Muslim, and they've worked together before. In fact, they prefer to work with each other. They work together well. And as Gus explained to us, he says, I'm Christian. Fazi is Muslim, and we work together very well. We choose to get along. And for the most part, that's how most people view life in Israel today. And there are religious disagreements. There are territorial disputes that continue to take place from time to time. And there are some lines of demarcation between Israel and other territories that I don't fully understand. I still don't have a good grasp on, you know, who owns the West Bank and who controls the Golan Heights. And yet Israelis live there. And in some places, look at the lines, the borders between Israel and Syria. You know, the UN has a zone there that they patrol and try to keep calm, and yet you know that there are tensions there, and something could erupt at any time, you know, between those countries. It has a lot to do with territorial, who owns this land and who owns that land. Now, I don't understand all of that. That's just like way beyond me. And I don't even think I want to understand all of that, really. But I just want to know some things about the Bible lands as we can see them, as we can study about them through God's book. And that's really where we're going in our discussions and study. First impressions. I'm going to ask you a question. What would you think would be your first impressions, the plain lands you're in Israel? What are the first things you would see, and what would your first impressions of Israel be? What would you think? What comes to your mind? Have you thought about it before? Probably not.
I'd say busy.
Busy. Busy. That would be accurate. What else? What else would be your impressions? Yes. Well, what would your expectation be?
You would think you were going to go step 2,000 years back in time.
You would. You would think that. But you're not. Well, there's places that look like it. But what else would you think?
Hot.
You know what? We were there in late October, and it was hot. And it wasn't even summertime. Now, it was warmer than usual. We had most of the days were over 80, or over 90, even mid-90s. One day was 100. Yeah, that's hot. You know, dry heat, that makes it better, right? It's still hot. Okay, it was hot. You know, when we landed and got into the airport there in Tel Aviv is where we landed. I mean, the airport, when you're walking through the airport, I mean, it looks like an American airport. Now, I'm not saying everything's the same. Those who have traveled internationally, you can go to a very modern airport, and everywhere you turn, you know that you are not in the United States. I mean, you know, the billboards and the signs, everything's in different languages. You know, there's different kinds of things to eat. you know, things that people are dressed differently. You can understand people when they're talking, you know, those kinds of things. But it's a modern airport, just like if you were going out of Charlotte down here, you know, in those regards. You know, the roads, the main roads, you know, going from one city to another, there's not a lot of main roads, let's understand. Remember, it's a small country. There's not a lot of roads. But the main roads are good. They're paved roads, good roads, and there's good transportation. We rode on a very modern bus with air conditioning part of the time. And, you know, it's modern as far as transportation. You could take a train from certain cities to others, a very fast commuter train. This is Israel today. And it's a, as far as technology goes, it's advanced as compared to, you know, many countries. In our hotel room, we had TV and we had Wi-Fi, you know, part of the time, you know. And, you know, so it's a modern kind of country and tourists. I did not expect so many tourists. I know I was a tourist. I guess I didn't know anybody else would show up. It seemed like everybody was a tourist in some places. And it turned out we were there at, like, you know, the prime tourist time, you know, in the fall. And you'd go to a site and there'd be a good-sized parking area, and Fozzie would just have to, like, make the bus bend in two to get into places for all the other tour buses that were there. You know, the Israelis know how to do tourism. They've got that figured out. And so there was just a lot of people, you know, and tourists from all over the world. And I can't say that there were more American tourists than anybody else. In fact, Europeans, Orientals, Australia, you know, from all over the world on their pilgrimage, most would tell you, is why they are there. Now, remember, as we said, the country is not, you know, very big. I mean, really, if we go all the way from the tip top, way up here in that little piece, all the way down to this little point, and this is desert down there, there's not much going on down there, let me tell you. You know, in this whole, you know, from this middle part of the Dead Sea coming on down, it's the wilderness. The Bible tells us that. You don't need me to tell you that. The Bible tells us that. You know, the wilderness of Zin and all that down here. But if you go from the very bottom right here all the way to that tip top, it's about 263 miles, you know, is what that is. And as far as width goes, so you go to this widest point right here, you're only talking 71 miles. So that gives us just an idea here, you know, of the size of the country. So if you go from, you know, Jerusalem over here to Tel Aviv, you know, I mean, you're only talking, I don't know, 25 miles maybe? 35 miles. It's just not all that far. Now we're driving the bus. You know, we'll take you there. You've gone across the country. And sometimes we forget that it's just not that big of a country. Let me tell you this. When we came into Tel Aviv over here right on the Mediterranean, and we as our study goes on, we're going to study some from Dan up here down to Beersheba down here. And points in between. So we came in right here, spent the night somewhere right about here. Netanya is the place we went to. And then our first stop was Caesarea, right there on the coast. Caesarea. Well, here's a map. You know, I've struggled to find some good maps. This is not so good. I mean, you can't really look at this here. But I just found out today, I learned about a good source for a map. I'm going to try to buy these now. I'll have these maps for some of our next PowerPoints, so we'll be able to see just a lot better. Here's, you know, some of these places, just to, you know, we're familiar with Jerusalem. We were looking at the map here for kids a while ago. They found Jerusalem, you know. They know some stories about Jerusalem. I mean, if you go to Israel, of course, you're going to spend some time, you know, in Jerusalem. We stayed 5 nights in Jerusalem. We didn't stay every day in Jerusalem. We went out from there, you know, to different sites. Tel Aviv is where we flew into. And let's see, Caesarea is where we're going to, our first study is going to be in Caesarea. And on up here, this is Carmel, Mount Carmel. That was on the first day. We won't get there tonight. We may not get to Caesarea tonight. Here's the way we're going. see if there's some other sites here. And we were talking about going from Dan to Beersheba. Just wanting us to get a lay of land. I know you've seen that before. You've seen maps of Israel before. But I just want us to get some of this in our minds so when we start talking about some of these places, that it'll kind of come to our mind in a quick way. Let me show you a few pictures here of Caesarea. Now, if I were just to say Caesarea on the Mediterranean coast, does anything come to mind? Any Bible stories that would come to your mind? Let me ask you this. Was Jesus ever there? Oh, be careful now. You know, there's two Caesareas. You know. I mean, we have Caesarea Philippi, which is way up to the north by Dan up in that region. Now, Jesus was there. Well, we know that. But I don't know of any. I haven't found any record of him being over here at this Caesarea. But there's some Bible characters in the New Testament we would read about as being in Caesarea. Can you think of any? Any of them come to your mind? Oh, come on. There's some that come to your mind. I know there is. Huh? Paul. Yeah, of course, Paul. Paul spent some time there. What about before Paul? Anybody? Cornelius. Yeah. Cornelius. And so, of course, then Peter was there too. Acts chapter 10, Acts chapter 11. Because Peter was sent by the Spirit to go and teach the Gentiles, you know, who were there in Caesarea. Sure enough. And so, when we were at Caesarea Maritime, as some call it, to make sure there's a distinction between Caesarea Philippi and Caesarea Maritime, it's on the sea. There, you know, when I've tried to think as we kind of walked through one area over this little rise, and you could see what would have been where the old city of Caesarea would be. I couldn't help but wonder. I wonder where Peter met Cornelius. I wonder where his house was. Because most any place there around the old city of Caesarea would have been close enough that you would have seen the Mediterranean there, because it's built, I mean, right on the Mediterranean. It was a port city. Of course, it's right on the Mediterranean. I wonder what he could see from there and where exactly that was at. I don't really know. And so there was Philip the Evangelist. When Paul came back into Caesarea, at another occasion in Acts chapter 21, jumping ahead there a little bit, we find out that was where the home of Philip the Evangelist, his four daughters were there, and Paul went and stayed or met with them there. Acts chapter 21, verse 8, you know, acknowledges that. You know, Paul's faithful decision to return back to Jerusalem, this is getting toward the latter part of the book of Acts, and after his missionary journeys had been complete. Paul came back through Caesarea. And you know what the brethren told him there? Do you remember? What did they say about him going to Jerusalem? They said, don't go. Yeah, don't go. You know, because if you go to Jerusalem, bad things are going to happen, you know, to you there. And so they tried to dissuade him from going. But Paul's mind was made up about that. And he was going on to Jerusalem. Well, he went to Jerusalem. And what happened? Yeah, he was bound up, wasn't he? And put on trial. And from that trial, where did he get sent to? Caesarea. He got sent to Caesarea. And there's some really interesting things that we were able to see and experience in Caesarea that takes us right back to the Bible story that we would read about in Acts chapter 23, 24, 25, when Paul spent a little bit of time in Caesarea. You know how long he spent there? I mean, he was there for a little while. And it was there that he got to meet Festus, you know, the procurator, the governor, you know, of Judea, who stayed right there in Caesarea. Because Caesarea was kind of the hub of the Roman influence in Israel of that time. It was a Roman city, you would say. It was basically, you know, at that time, I was going to say it was built by the Romans. That's not exactly right. Because you go back to about 586 B.C., when the Persians had great influence in that region, is when you find more of the establishment of the city. I'm not sure really just how much was established at that time. But in the days of Herod the Great, which is a little bit before the time of Christ, There was a lot that happened in Caesarea. It was made into a fine city. And it was kind of the Roman arm into Judea of the day. And so that's where the governor was at. And that's where he stayed. Herod had had quite the palace there. In fact, you'll see it in a moment. Well, you'll see remnants of it is what you can see there. But you know, in the text here, it's like, just reading a couple of things, Acts 23 and verse 23. And he called for two centurions, saying, prepare 200. This is when Paul is going to be sent to Caesarea. And he had to do so under guard, remember, as he was having to leave Jerusalem. And so, you know, they're making preparations for that. Prepare 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at the third hour of the night and provide mounts to set Paul on and bring him safely to Felix the governor. This is as he's being sent to Caesarea. And so, in fact, he does. And as the story goes on through chapter 23, chapter 24, you know, he has to come before Felix, and Felix has questions for him. Who are you? What are you doing? You know, all of those things that we would read about. And Paul gives his defense, you know, before Felix. Chapter 24, in verse 27, it says that after 2 years, Porcius Festus succeeded Felix. And Felix, wanting to do the Jews a favor, left Paul bound. You know, Paul was going to wind up staying there. He stayed there for a good long period of time. In fact, he was there for 2 years. Chapter 24, verse 27 gives us some insight that he had already been there for 2 years. Because now Felix is no more. You know, he's been succeeded by, you know, Porcius Festus. So Felix was in Caesarea for 2 years. Now, what was his state when he was there? What was going on with Paul when he was in Caesarea? Who do we know? Oh, you know. Well, I mean, he was in jail, so to speak. It's not like in prison as we sometimes think of being in prison. You know, he could have been in a whole lot worse situation. He had some freedoms. You know, Felix had said that his friends could come and could go. His needs were taken care of. But he was right here in Caesarea. And in fact, we might even know very close to the area where he was at when he was imprisoned, when he was being held guard there. So when we went to Caesarea, this is a national park now. And the Israelis, they know how to do national parks. They know how to set this up. They know what tourism is all about. Now, I'm not opposed to that. It's not a negative thing. But they have this set out, and there's been a lot of archaeological type things that have been done there in Caesarea. And so this national park right here, Caesarea National Park, the Roman Theater, a reminder again who was in charge when this city was at perhaps one of its greatest points, you know. And our tour for the day is about to begin right here in Caesarea. I want to tell you a couple things about the tour and what goes on, and I'm going to stop right there. Because I want to kind of group everything about Caesarea together. And there's not going to be time to do that. Here's kind of how the tour worked. And again, I'm dealing with a lot of introductory kind of things here, just so you understand how some things, what our day was like and what we did. And next time, I'm not going to talk about those things. We're going to get on to some things that's more important as far as the study goes. Every place we went, our tour group, which was 25 people, all of whom are Christians, almost all of them from the States. We had folks from Texas and Florida and Alabama, North Carolina and Tennessee, and South Africa. You've heard me talk about Patty Kendallball, I've worked with in Africa a lot. His son, Adam, who lives in South Africa, was as well on this tour with us. I've worked with Adam before in South Africa and in Zimbabwe, and so it was kind of an interesting opportunity for us to spend some time together. That was very nice. Those eight preachers on this trip, which I tried my very best not to feel too intimidated by that. Most of them, if not all of them, almost all of them, I guess, were younger than me, and and I think every one of them a whole lot smarter than me. Just some of the, I know several of these guys, and they're just really sharp, just really sharp guys. And I enjoyed a lot spending time with them. I'll tell you some more about that perhaps later on. Our tour guides, we had two. Barry Britnell, who lives in Huntsville, Alabama, was the organizer of the tour. Barry has been to Israel several times. This is, I think, was the third tour that he has led to Israel. So he did a real good job at organizing. And then Gus, you can see his name there. It's a Jewish Hebrew name. I can't even begin to tell you how to say it. His name is Gus. And he was really a good guide. I mean, would just spend a lot of time explaining things, could answer any question you would bring up, enjoyed getting to know him. And just making the point that there's all kinds of guides. I mean, he would tell you quickly he is a Christian guide, because there are Jewish guides and there are Muslim guides. You know, we're going to take you to some of the same places, some of the same places, but their explanation of some of the places that you would go, particularly Jerusalem, might be a whole lot different than what we would find in a biblical account. Enough said on what that is. And just some of the, I'm going to stop right here, because now we're going to get into more of just looking at some sites around Caesarea Philippi and some things that I want to talk about, but I want to do it all in one group. So again, next time, Lord willing, it's going to be more of a study of some things that we did and some things that we saw, less explanation of how we got there and what's the purpose of the trip and things such as that. Just felt like I needed to get some of those things past us. Now, if you have some questions about what we talked about tonight, we can deal with that right now. Any thoughts, any comments or questions that you would have? Nothing? I bet next time you'll have some. As we go through, Lord willing, we'll talk about Caesarea Philippi next time and Mount Carmel. That's probably the two things that we'll look at next time. And so if you think about it between now and then, probably 2 weeks from tonight, we'll, you know, do a little bit of reading on those sites. See what you learn. Brent?
I was just thinking that Dan to Beersheba reminded me of when they numbered the people.
Yeah, right in that portion of Israel, as we call it today.
What were the two
again, Joe? Caesarea Philippi. No, I'm sorry. Caesarea Maritime. Caesarea and Mount Carmel. Which, if you think back here just real quick, go back to this map. Let's go back to this map. No, let's go to this map. You know, that, like we came into Tel Aviv right there. Here is Caesarea, right in that area. At least I'm pretty sure that's about, I added that on the map. So it's right in that area somewhere close by. Then you see this region right up here. Mount Carmel's not on that map, but it's that spot right there, that taller mountain right there. There's a really interesting event in the Old Testament that takes place right there at Mount Carmel. Lord willing, we're going to talk about that next time. And you might just look that up, see what you come up with. Other thoughts or questions tonight? That's all I've got. Thank you so much for being here. I hope next time we'll get to a point where you have some comments and more comments and questions. We'll try to deal with that next time.